Hi, I'm Elise.
I'm Matt, and welcome to Pod Wraiths, the Star Trek Deep Space Nine podcast. If this is your first time joining us, we're two friends watching Star Trek Deep Space Nine and sharing both our deep and irreverent thoughts on our favorite Star Trek series.
This week, we're talking about Season 5, Episode 19, Ties of Blood and Water. Teleplay by Robert Hewitt Wolf and directed by Avery Brooks.
I think I've heard of that guy.
You might have. Ties of Blood and Water aired on April 14th, 1997.
This week on Deep Space Nine, Kira asked T'Kani Gamorre to come to Deep Space Nine to provide information about the Cardassian government and the revitalizing dissident movement. Gul Dukat arrives and demands Gamorre's extradition. Okay, Elise, we'll start this podcast as we start most of our podcast. Did you or did you not remember this episode?
I did not. None of it seems familiar.
This is one where it's like, I know I've seen it, but it's not one for some reason that I think about a lot. And I think that's probably going to change.
Yeah, for an episode that I didn't remember, I really liked it a lot. I think it's going to sit with me a little bit as well.
Yeah, it was really good. And Nana Visitor, who plays Kira, obviously, is pretty much a powerhouse in this episode. Kudos to her, and I guess, by a certain extent, Avery for getting that performance out of her and things like that. But yeah, it was really, really good.
Yeah, I really liked Nana's acting in this episode. They let her be, this is going to sound weird because she's Bajoran, but they let her be a person that has understandable and real reactions to information she learns in so that she's not perfect. And I think that everything she's feeling in this episode is understandable. I just really liked it. I really liked the use of the flashbacks. I think it added weight to how Kira was feeling about the current situation. I really like the flashbacks when they are so, I just felt like they were so heavily related to what was happening currently. And it made a lot of sense.
I think I have it later in the notes, but this would be as good of a part of any to bring it up. This episode really reminded me in a lot of ways about the pilot Emissary for Deep Space Nine, where Sisko's explaining linear time to the prophets, and what they can't understand about what he's saying is the idea that he exists, they feel like he exists in the past. He exists at that moment of Jennifer's death and, at the Battle of Wolf 359. And the way that you're talking about with the, the flashbacks and the story and the experience of Kira, with her father's death and the idea of this, kind of father figure, not stepdad, chosen, this father paternal figure in her life now, and the comparing and contrasting. And it's the idea that, grief exists outside of time. We both live there and here. Grief pushes us. It influences us. It's there always, and it's just different volumes. I just thought that was really powerful. Pretty cool.
I love it. On a little bit of a lighter note, we get Weyoun 5. The Vorta cloning themselves literally became a thing because Deep Space Ira wanted to continuously cast Jeffrey Combs in this role. he loved him the last time he played Weyoun, which we now learn is Weyoun 4. I love Jeffrey Combs. The Vorta are fucking weirdos, and he does a great job with it. One thing I wanted to talk about before we get into the plot, I was reading up on Memory Alpha, and there was this part where they were, I'm going to paraphrase, but it was based on something Robert Hewitt Wolf had said in the Deep Space Nine companion. To him, the most important scene in this episode was when Kira introduces Kira Yoshi O'Brien to Gamorre. Neither of those people are her, are Kira's biological family, but they are 100% her family, and it's important that they should know each other. And I thought, like, she's so proud of Yoshi in, like, a surrogate mom kind of way, not in, like, a I feel weird because this isn't my baby. Like, it feels very natural. I mean, we've talked about it a lot, but I love Kira's relationship with Kira Yoshi and Keiko and Miles. Like, they just are wonderful for me. And similarly, you know, Gamora is also kind of a found family. And it just made me think, like, does Kira have the most found family of all the Deep Space Nine people?
I mean, I think maybe the answer is yes. But either way, Nerys has so much found family. Yeah. It's wild that, like, she isn't explicitly queer. And, like, her and Watson had a sapphic panic moment in their friendship.
Right.
Like, look at that haircut.
I also think Odo has a lot of found family, like, with Dr. Mora and stuff like that, too.
Yeah.
But, like, they're the two characters that don't really have any, like, biological family that we ever see. But, yeah. Mm. We love found family.
Yes, we do. Now, did you remember... I was saying, Kira, did you remember? Elise, did you remember T'Kene Gamor and Second Skin and all of that stuff?
I forgot what happened, but I do remember that Kira, like, was... I couldn't remember if she also thought she was Cardassian in that, or if she just was pretending. Like, I feel like I remember parts of it, and that Kira looked Cardassian in it and was pretending to be one, but I don't remember if, like, she was pretending, or, like, she actually, like, knew, or she didn't know. I don't remember the specifics.
Yeah, it was very much like an identity crisis sort of thing. Like, she woke up as a Cardassian and wasn't sure, because... Ileana Gamor was like an Obsidian Order agent who went undercover. And they basically had kidnapped Kira and were trying to convince her that she was Ileana as a way to, you know, she would try to escape. Her father would help her, and that would out him at that point as part of the.
Yeah,
the
so it was a ruse to get her.
Central commandment.
To get Gamor. Because Gamor has always kind of been on a different side than, like, Gul Dukat and all of those fascists.
Yeah.
So which continues in this episode. Okay, that helps me. I couldn't remember, like, who knew what and when for that episode, but you've cleared it up for me. So this episode.
And that was one of the early, like, Garak helps out the crew. Because you know, he goes and he ends up killing Entek, the other Obsidian Order guy.
Oh, yes. I do remember that. So this episode is definitely somewhat of a sequel to that season 3 episode, Second Skin, because Kira's father figure, I will be your father figure.
Your father figure.
I've been singing that all day. Gamora is not safe on Cardassia now that Dukat has taken over and they have the alliance with the Dominion, because he is not fashy. And Kira wants Gamora to, like, be the leader of the opposition. So she invites him to come to Deep Space Nine to discuss it. And we find out quite quickly the reason he's come to Deep Space Nine is to tell her that he's dying. He has, I forget what the disease is called, but I kind of laugh anytime someone's sick on this show and Bashir does, like, his own tests and ends up just reconfirming the same diagnosis that already existed. Like, no one can be sick on this show unless the house doctor agrees. I always find that super funny.
It's every time. Yeah.
I can't even place exact, like, examples. I just know it happens every time.
Yeah. And, like, I guess narratively it, like, makes it, like, it adds weight, and it's not just, you know, they're showing and also telling, but it's, like, from Kira's perspective, it's like, oh, you think you're dying? I don't believe you. Let's get my friend the doctor to check you out as, like, a second or third opinion or whatever, right?
Like, yeah. So, of course, as soon as Gamora is on Deep Space Nine, Dukat, like, who knows everything, contacts Sisko and is immediately like, hey, can you, like, I'm adding likes for emphasis. Can you like maybe extradite Gamor back to Cardassia? And like, I do love that Sisko is like, the Federation not only does not recognize your government right now, Gul Dukat, we have no extradition treaties with the current Cardassia, and neither does Bajor. So like, fuck off. And I'm just like, yeah, daddy.
Did you say yeah, daddy?
Yeah, I did. And then we get the sweet scene where Kira Yoshi is being introduced to Gamor, and just the way that Kira is just holding him and just being so proud, and he has that beautiful smile on his face. It just makes me so happy. We also get to learn of a Cardassian ritual called Shrital, which actually I find really interesting. So this is when a dying Cardassian shares all their secrets with their family, like all the like family secrets. I watched the movie Coco yesterday, and so my brain is like, have you seen that film?
Remember Me, the Pixar movie?
Yes. So I'm thinking like of all of the secrets in that family and how like interesting this would be if that was like the Coco's family. But yeah, I really liked that movie, side note. So it's funny because Kira is like, I don't know if I'm the right person for this ritual. And it's like, look, your father figure is dying. And she remembers when her dad was sick and dying. And she realizes she's the only person Gamor has because his daughter is still lost. Yeah. I also think it's funny because who else would be a good person for this? Like, she's like, oh yeah, maybe like a therapist or somebody, and
Odo.
Is it Odo for once is like, he doesn't want to be debriefed, he wants to talk to someone he loves. Like, I mean, that's not his exact words, but it's very close. Yeah. And I'm just like, Kira, get your head out of your ass.
Well, and it's really interesting though, because we find out through the use of flashbacks that like Kira couldn't stand to see, you know, her dad bedridden and dying, and just how uncomfortable mm-hmm. it made her. And she doesn't, I think a lot of her reluctance comes from not wanting to go through that again. And it's like Gamor and Kira's relationship is, I just use the word interesting, why I think Gamor and Kira have like stayed close is again that idea of the ever presence of grief and the volume, you know, being adjusted on it. It's like she's still, you know, grieving her father, and he's grieving the daughter that is probably dead, but he's still trying to like hold on right. hope that she's mm-hmm. still thinks she's a Bajoran living somewhere on Bajor, right? So
yeah, it's just, I also just conceptually love the idea of like, my family's history is going to live on because I've shared these stories. It feels, it's something in media that I just really love. It makes me think of that one episode of Star Trek Rebels where Hera's Caligari.
Is Star Trek Rebels? Star Wars Rebels?
Did I say Star Trek Rebels?
Yeah.
Oh my god. I meant Star Wars Rebels. Wow. That episode where Hera's Caligari is missing, and like they go family history. Like I love family tradition in fiction, and it's just really nice to have stories passed down.
Tradition.
I'm weirdly a movie I've never seen, but I'm obviously familiar with the music. Okay, so we get some scenes of Kira interviewing Gamor, but she's also helping with his treatments. Like, Bashir shows her what to do, but he really is not really taking to the treatments. So it's very clear that to me that he came here to die near Kira and be near Kira.
Yeah, and I think even, like, the treatments and, like, you know, whatever, the space IV and, like, whatever that Bashir sets them up with, it's very clearly all, like, palliative care.
Yeah, right? Like, it's just to make him comfortable.
Pain management. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. No, I agree. Yeah. It's sad. Soon after that, we have Ducat and Wayun 5 showing up. Their intention is to take Gamor back to Cardassia. They're referring to him as a fugitive. Ducat tries to, like, act like he knows where Gamor's daughter is or can help find her or something like that in a way to convince him to come back. And I appreciate that while sick, Gamor still is like, yeah, fuck off. Like, I don't trust you.
Yeah.
I do think that Ducat is just really, really evil. He's a master of ruining things. He tells, like, okay, so we have the flashbacks, and I don't remember, like, how many flashbacks we've had up until this point of the episode, because I watched it a couple days ago, but, like, we do see Kira caring for her father during this massacre, and he's injured, and he's, like, his garden is ruined, and Ducat loves to poison everything, and so he tells Kira, which he's not lying to her, that Gamor was at the massacre, and, like, he's not telling her for her own benefit. He's telling her for his own agenda. Like, he just wants to poison everyone who's happy how I feel about him.
Yeah.
You know, Gamor tries to explain why they did this massacre. They thought monks were giving weapons to the Bajoran resistance. And this has just felt so... I'm going to say this every time we have a Bajor episode now. It really made me think of Israel bombing Palestine and, like, all the innocent people that are killed in... Excuse me, I have to sneeze. All the innocent people that are killed while they claim that they're trying to get, like, the Hamas leaders. You know what I mean? Like, it just feels very similar to that. There was no mitigation on trying not to kill innocent people. Or minimal. I mean, that's as much as credit as I'm giving them. I recently read a book, Bob Woodward's new book, War, which has a corny-ass title. But I wanted to, like... It's mostly about Ukraine, and then there's some Israel-Palestine stuff. And, like, it's really, really, really clear how much Netanyahu, like, does not give a shit about any of the Palestinians. Like, the innocent people those people are not innocent in his eyes. He does not care. And that's what this made me think of.
And Woodward's a Republican, so the fact that you took that from his book certainly saying something.
Yeah, I read it out of curiosity. Woodward's one of those people that, like, I'm not like, yay, and I did not spend money on this book. My father, who loves political books, bought the audiobook, and we share a Amazon household, so I was able to listen to the audiobook for free. But, like, people talk, it's all about... access journalism with Bob Woodward. Like, people tell him shit. So, like, I was curious from that perspective, like, what he knew.
Which is, like, you're 100% correct, the idea of, like, that point it being, like, access journalism. But that's just, like, so antithetical to, like, what Woodward is most famous for.
I know.
Like, and just the way things can change over, like, half a century ago. Folks who don't know, Bob Woodward was one of the two journalists
with Carl Bernstein
who broke Watergate.
Did a good thing in his life, but, like, yeah, he is someone who I do take with a grain of salt. But yeah, it was very interesting, like, the conversations about Israel and Palestine that he was privy to. Very interesting.
Yeah.
So, understandably, Kira is very, 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 very angry. That massacre is when her father died. She doesn't know what Gamor did during that time. She just knows that he was there on behalf of the Cardassians.
Yeah.
Apparently, Ducat also tried to poison Gamor while he's on the station. But I like that it comes out I like the way that it's like presented to us. Like Sisko brings the bottle of Kanar to Jukat and Wei Yun and was like offering it to them. Or I don't know if he said it. I don't know if he brings it to them or they come and talk to him. Regardless.
No, he brings it to them.
And yeah. And like, oh, would you like some of this Kanar? And they're like, no, I'm good. And it's very clear that like everyone knows that it's poisoned. And Wei Yun just takes like a huge sip of it. And we find out that apparently the Vorta are immune to most poisons. And I'm just like, okay, that's very silly. But I did really enjoy the Sisko Dukat back and forth because in this episode specifically, Sisko has a one up on Dukat, I think. And I enjoy both when Dukat has a leg up or when Sisko has a leg up because they really enjoy playing with each other and it's really fun to watch. Even though Dukat is like super evil, I do like their adversarial relationship.
And just like, hey, let's give a shout out to Wei Yun in this episode because like he's just there for a good time, not a long time, and he just thoroughly is enjoying the like bishiness, like back and forth between Sisko and Dukat. He's just there for the good times, right? So like, yeah. Wei Yun is all of us.
I mean, hopefully we would not hitch ourselves to Dukat, but I don't know how much of a choice Wei Yun had in that. I know earlier we talked it's about...
Like he sent his Dukat's handler, but he just enjoys letting Dukat off the leash and seeing what happens.
Yeah, that does seem like it's what's happening. Earlier, Odo was trying to tell Kira, like, you are the right person to talk to Kaemor and get his secrets. I don't think I mentioned this earlier, but like Kira did talk to Sisko and they talked about using the secrets to help the Federation against Cardassia. And I don't think Gamor would be too upset about that, actually. So Odo kind of chides Kira because after she finds out that Gamor was at the massacre, she stops going to see him. She's really upset and she's like, she's kind of like, fuck him, let him die. But Odo mentions that because he read Gamor's records, I guess, and Gamor was only 19 during that massacre, which like, yeah, is kind of... I get confused about this because, like, how old is Gamor now and how old is Kira now? And if Kira was, like, taking care of her dad and was, like, already in the Resistance...
Was it the same massacre? Because I missed that.
Yeah.
I thought it was just another one.
I think it was the same... I think it's the same one. Did I misunderstand that? I'm pretty sure that was the one. Hold on. I'm gonna Google this, but you're gonna probably hear my typing. Give me a moment. I hope I didn't just like make an assumption. Obviously we'll cut some of this out. Okay. Mm-hmm. What's the name of this? Oh, the Kiesa Monastery Massacre. Oh, maybe you know what? Yeah, I think you're right. Okay, so let's start over here. I think I was incorrect on thinking the time when Kira's dad died was the same thing as the massacre that Gamor was 19 years old during. So there isn't that added weight to it. I think that Kira is just being reminded of when her dad died by the fact that Gamor is dying. So apologies for my incorrect assessment earlier.
But, like, at the same time, too, it's, like, representative of, right? So...
Oh, yeah. It doesn't matter that it wasn't the same thing. Like, it's similar enough. We do see, and you mentioned this earlier, in the flashback, Kira, instead of spending her dad's last moments with him, as you said, she kind of ran away, she goes off to do a revenge on whoever hurt him and destroyed his garden. And when And he's like kind of begging her to stay with him. And we see that one pal of hers whose name I can't remember, but we've seen him a couple times. He's one of the guys that died in the episode where all of Kira's friends were dying. He was like the man in a couple. I forget his name. Yeah,
the ones with the FetLife profiles. We talked about them. Yes. Like, right?
Oh my God, yes. I love that. But yeah, so we see her like running off with that guy to like do this revenge. And it's interesting to me because like those people can get the revenge done without you. And I understand you're wanting to help because like you want revenge for your dad. But like, it's very clear you're about to miss your dad's death. Obviously, when she returns, her dad had passed and she didn't get to spend his last moments with him.
Well, and he died in pain crying out for her, right?
Like, yeah, it was not
good. Yeah.
And like, because of like how much pain he was in, and like Bashir is confronting her as well and saying like, Gamor probably has only an hour to live. He's in immense pain. Like, he really needs you. And she's just so dismissive of it because she's so angry about Gamor being at the massacre. I'm not excusing Gamor from being at the massacre, but I do think, like, when you're 19 years old and you've, like, I'm sure Cardassia has, like, forced military service, like some other countries we know. It's hard to, like, decide between I'm gonna do this or I'm gonna go to jail instead of doing this. I'm not saying it's good, but it's complicated. I was really happy
I was just gonna say that it's Fiorel is the man and Lapuza or whatever is the woman of the couple from the Chicago
I'm really glad, though, that Kira eventually decided that she wasn't going to repeat her mistake and go to sit with Gamor, and went and sat with Gamor as he died. Bashir says something that I found really interesting. He was like, he kind of said no one deserves to die alone. And I would argue that there are some people that I would be amused by them dying alone. I thought that when I watched the episode, I'm like, I can come up with some Donald Trump, some people that I would be like, yeah, that person deserves to die alone. Do I think Gamor is one of them? Probably not. Gul Dukat? Sure. But I think that's also the doctor in Bashir. I really, really, really liked the way that this ended with Dukat and Sisko. Like, I know this episode is about Kira and her complicated feelings, but I got so much satisfaction out of Dukat intending to like cart Gamor around, acting like and lying to everyone and saying that Gamor embraced the Dominion on his deathbed. Like, that's his plan to it just reminds me of when like someone dies and like they have like their family gives them this like religious service and you like know the person didn't believe in God or like was not religious, and it just feels like it's like cringy to me. Like, the person would not have appreciated this. I've been to a couple funerals like that. It's so uncomfortable. But Sisko gets to ruin that for him by being like, oh, the funeral's already been arranged. Sorry, you don't get to do your propaganda. And then we see Kira burying Gamor back on Bajor near her father.
Yeah. Good episode.
Yeah, it really was. And I know we didn't talk for as long as we have other times, but I feel like this is not the kind of episode where we needed to really.
I mean, what were we just supposed to say? Everything. Say it's good for 90 minutes? It's good. Yeah. Watch it. It's good. You probably already watched it, right? Great. So I didn't find it a particularly thirsty episode, though, did you?
No, I did not either.
Yeah, I did have a couple candidates for most Star Trek thing, though. Yes. In the flashbacks, Kira's wearing that wig that has the longer hair.
Yeah, younger. They do a good job. That's a reoccurring thing. Yeah, I really like that, too. I think they do a good job of making Kira's, like, flashbacks seem like she's younger with the longer hair. She seems more femme as well.
Yeah.
Like, which I think some ways, is though, in a like, way to make her seem more militant now. And I Don't know how I feel about that, but... Other...
Yeah, yeah. I feel like practically I would rather have the shorter hair in the past, and like I would grow my hair out a little bit more now, but I get it. Yeah. Also, in the flashbacks, we see her wearing that one outfit with the crochet top, which is like Kira's go-to non-uniform outfit that apparently she's had for years.
Yeah. Tessa pointed that out when we were watching it on Friday. She's like, I love that top. She's like, Tessa was like, I wonder if that is like a standard issue undershirt for the Bajoran uniform, or if that's like her own version of, like, if like she has that separate, like you can wear whatever undershirt you want, and that's like what she chooses.
Yeah. And then the other thing I didn't put in the notes, but would be remiss not to mention, is we have a Jeffrey Combs character. That is also yes. a very Star Trek thing.
Yeah. I'm going to co-sign your wig one, mostly because I couldn't think of my own option for this.
Yeah.
I just was gonna say I still have father figures stuck in my head.
Oh, I'm definitely gonna listen to it after we're done recording, and then actually finally do what I said I'd do last week and post the next episode.
Oh, bless you.
I have energy. So, yay. And also the idea of Matt, you're not going to play more Dragon Age until you post the next podcast.
I'm going to take your whatever box that is on and away from you until I don't know what Dragon Age is on, PlayStation or Xbox.
I mean,
it might be on both. Which one do you have?
I have a PS5.
That's what I thought. I thought you were a PlayStation girly.
Yeah.
It's really funny. We have a PlayStation and an Xbox here, and they're... And I never put on a physical media in the living room of my apartment because I don't know how to use either one of those machines. So I just like let other people put on movies for me unless it's streaming. I've never used an Xbox or a PlayStation in my life. I'm a Switch. I'm a Nintendo girly.
Let's see. Oh, you're a Switch, eh? That's...
sometimes, maybe.
All right. Until next time, Elise, where can folks find more of you on the internet?
You can find me on Blue Sky, Letterboxd, and Storygraph at Chicken Tendi. That's T-E-N-D-I. You can find links to my other podcast, Fang Bangers Pod, on Blue Sky and Instagram at Fang Bangers Pod. That's bangers with a Z or Z. And you?
Yeah, you can catch me on Blue Sky and Letterboxd at Maddie Hugh, MattyHugh. You can catch us together on Blue Sky and Instagram at PodRace, and you can email us at podrace@gmail.com.
Please remember to rate and review us on the podcatching system of your choice. Thank you again to our editor, Melissa, who, congratulations, just got married. Woo! And to DJ Empirical for our interstellar theme song.
And until next time, computer and program.
Bye!